It's A Call to the Parent with Matt the Producer on Saga 960 AM.
Well, Matthew, we are now in the seventh inning of this program, so it's time to make the call to the pen.
Yeah, but you know what, though? I actually can't make it out. I'm in the middle of playing video games.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it turns out that video games are now something that are really bothersome to many, including the manager of the baseball team that plays in the GTA, which I will not be naming today. Charlie Montoyo has issued a pregame curfew on playing video games in the clubhouse this season, saying that there's going to be a cutoff time where that's it. You can no longer play video games. Matt, we've had conversations with many baseball players that play in the city of Toronto and elsewhere, and it appears as though Fortnite and many video games is something that they really do enjoy. And listen, I've been in that clubhouse. I've seen guys. They love sitting playing video games, and I think this is a good thing that Charlie's doing. You know what? Lay the law down. You're there to prepare for a baseball game, not play video games. You want to play video games? Do that at home.
I agree. And for the months of essentially end of February, so let's say the beginning of March to the end of September, you are under the employ of a professional sports organization. And if the manager of that organization, of Canada's team, deems it necessary to have a cutoff time or a curfew prior to game time when it comes to video games and all that sort of paraphernalia, I think it's completely within the realm of reason. And actually, in fact, the Vancouver Canucks last year, they had a curfew set for Fortnite on the road, because what was happening is their younger players especially, they were waking up for the next day for practice or morning skate and then for the game, and they would be complete bags of crap as far as exhaustion because they were up all night playing Fortnite. You know what's interesting, man, is you've been covering the Jays a long time. Oh, sorry, you've been covering Canada's team a long time, and you would have seen a bit of a change here, because 15 years ago, it wouldn't necessarily be that they're worried about video games. It would have been worried about them ending up in the hotel rooms of people or in bars, or if you were in Las Vegas, ending up in a ditch. But now it seems as though video games are the real issue.
Yeah, it is. And listen, you talk to any of the players that played back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, they'll tell you, and we've had many of them on our show. Before the game, guys would get together and talk about that game. They would talk about hitting, pitching, fielding. They'd talk about strategies on how they're going to attack that particular pitcher or hitter on that day. And now, it just seems to be such a relaxed, which in some ways is good, but it's just almost, they call it a clubhouse, and it acts like a clubhouse. But what I find interesting is that this is not just managers and GMs that are laying down the law. This is veteran players that are on teams. And I don't know if you saw the story, but last year during the playoffs, during the playoff run, Carlos Santana, finding his teammates playing Fortnite in the Phillies clubhouse, grabbed a baseball bat and smashed the TV. So I'm curious to see how that will go over with the team this year, especially with a guy like Bryce Harper, who's going to be pretty much running the show in there. But I think that there are a lot of veteran players that are pissed about this. I don't think they like the idea of the young kids sitting there playing video games.
Now, imagine being a veteran MLB player, a free agent veteran MLB player, and you're on the outside looking in, and you read the story about Carlos Santana smashing TVs. As a veteran that's not employed, you're thinking to yourself, look at these little punk kids in the clubhouse playing video games, not even acting like pros. And here I am, I don't even have a job, and yet these little punk kids are under the employ of major league clubs, but they're basically not even being pros while they're on the job, right?
And this goes beyond sports, right? I mean, how often do you see somebody that is supposed to be working their job and they're busy on their phone doing things, right? They're playing games or they're Facebooking, or, and I think this goes beyond the idea of video games. I think that anything, chatting on social media, talking to, I think you should be allowed to talk to your family, but I think that if you're sitting in there tweeting or Facebooking or taking pictures of yourself in front of your locker and throwing them on Instagram an hour before the game, that's probably not a good idea either.
Is this indicative of a sea change as far as the game? We keep hearing from veteran players that these young kids, especially offensive kids coming up, they don't really care about learning how to hit into the gap. They don't really care about learning how to hit opposite field or hit away from the shift. All they care about is blasting the ball as deep in the field as possible. Is this indicative of what's happening? These kids are sitting in the clubhouse, not worrying about what's happening on video, not looking at pitchers' tendencies. All they're doing is they're playing video games because they don't really care about hitting against the shift or hitting opposite, because their job is to play video games. And when it comes for offense, just try to blast that ball as far as humanly possible.
I don't think it's just hockey, though. I mean, just baseball, Matt. I think that you look at hockey, you look at basketball. I think that this is, you look outside the realm of sports. I think this is just the way a lot of younger folks are. And listen, I know we've got a lot of younger folks that are listening to the show, and if you take exception to this, by all means, let me know. I mean, let me know if this is exactly what we're talking about. And we're not trying to bash the millennials out there, but it's a different time and it's a different age that we're growing up in. And listen, when we were kids, Matt, would we be doing that if we had access to that? Yeah, of course. But I mean, what would we have to do? We'd have to pick up our full video game system and bring it with us to work, right? Which would include a television, a big box, and a bag full of different games. We didn't have the option of playing games on our phone. And it's funny because who is it we spoke to last year? Jordan Romano, I think it was, that had a full video game system he would bring on the bus with him for the guys to play. Now, on the bus, that's fine. You're traveling. I think the reason baseball gets talked about more than any other sports is because there seems to be a lot more downtime than there are in any other sports. Now, let me ask you this. Hockey game, you're between periods. You have your intermission. Some guys will you know, get some treatment. Other guys will just, you know, sit down and flake out. You think it's cool for a player during intermission to pick up their phone and start playing a game?
Yeah, but when it comes to intermission, in a lot of cases, these players either have an interview to do on the way into the dressing room.
One player.
Right?
One player will.
Right. Okay, but most of them have to get their skates off to have them resharpened. Most of them are retaping a stick or doing something. There really is not that much time between periods for these players to be able to get a full game of Fortnite in. Now, granted, I'm also not a Fortnite expert. I don't play the game. But if these players have got 10 minutes of downtime in between periods, okay, maybe they're on their phone. But to me, this feels like a leadership issue. This feels like if you have a problem in the Maple Leafs dressing room with certain players playing Fortnite and they're not really putting up numbers on the ice, as a leader in that room, you have to come out and go, okay, guys, listen, put the phones down, everybody shut off, pull the plugs on the video game system. We got to talk about what's happening on the ice. Is this indicative of a leadership problem when it comes to the Blue Jays? Is this indicative of a leadership problem when it came to the Phillies? I don't know. But look, the Blue Jays numbers last season sucked. Maybe this was indicative of a leadership issue. Maybe there was something going on where the leaders had just given up and they didn't care and let the little young pups run around and do what they want. I don't know, but I'm all for Charlie Montoyo coming out and saying, all right, this ends now.
And you know what? I mean, I don't think this is a Blue Jay issue or a Toronto baseball team issue. I think this is an issue for all sports. And I think it's in all walks of life too, right? I mean, and here's the thing. You know, you talk about pregame in the clubhouse or between periods if you're a hockey player. Is that any different than if I'm working in a factory and it's my lunch break or it's my, you know, 15-minute break at 2:30 and I'm sitting in the lounge or kitchen or whatever having a cup of coffee? Am I allowed to play my video games while I'm on break? I don't think anyone would have an issue with that. And then there's also, you know, an argument you may hear from certain players that say, hey, listen, that's what I do to get me into the focus of playing. I play Fortnite, and that gets me psyched up, and it gets me ready to go out and do it. So in some ways, it is pregame prep. I mean, you could easily come up with an argument going the other way.
Yes. However, when you are in the Scotiabank Arena in the dressing room, you are technically on the job. And if your manager or your coach comes out and says there will be no Fortnite between periods, this is something that you have to obey. These are the rules and the regulations of the company that you are employed under. And when you've got million-dollar athletes that are out supposed to be performing, and your manager comes and says, all right, these are the rules and regulations that you guys are going to have to play under, you have to follow it, man. Like, you have to follow it. Now, I think there is a big difference between playing Fortnite before the game, so after stretch, after BP, after that, before the game, and then playing it in between innings or you know, during the game. Because during the game and in between innings, you're supposed to have your head in the game.
Oh, yeah.
And be trying to work out, okay, that guy got ahead on a 3-2 count on a backdoor slider. Next time I see him, I'm not going to be doing that. And all of those things, you're supposed to be making adjustments. Well, if your head is into blowing your opponent's head off on Fortnite, then you're not focusing on the game, are you?
Probably not.
Right?
Unless you're a pitcher, and then the next inning you go out there and you actually plunk a guy right in the head, then
or in the foot, if you're Trent Thornton,
you could almost say that was what inspired you to do it, is playing Fortnite.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got about 7-8 minutes left, so I do want to address a couple of things that are going on in the world of baseball. And first of all, Devin Travis had surgery on his knee on the weekend, and it was last Wednesday, and it repaired a small meniscus tear in his left knee. Now, I've had a chance to chat a bit with Devin via text, and we're looking at lining him up on a show real soon. And listen, he, more than anything, he's done with this kind of stuff. He's so tired of the injuries. But what he did say to me was that he is at least thankful that they know what this is and they're able to fix it. And a meniscus tear is something that could happen to anybody. As we saw it happen a couple of years ago to Michael Saunders, this is not a sign of weakness. This is not a sign of injury prone. This is just another just dumb luck for him. He won't be starting the season with the team. He'll begin the year on the DL. But I'm really glad to hear that the organization wants very badly to, you know, have him back and get back in the lineup, because they see something that you and I both see and a lot of fans see, and that's the fact that this kid is loaded with talent.
Now, let me play devil's advocate. But I've spoken with Devin personally. He's a wonderful human being. And when he is healthy and on the field, he is an elite leadoff hitter. But you got to ask yourself a question. How long before the organization says, okay, we have to move on? And not because he is not a great baseball player and not because he's not a wonderful person, but because they're constantly having to make provisions when he's injured and get other bodies onto the field. I love the guy. I think he's great. And I think he was a wonderful acquisition by a former management regime. But man, this is injury upon injury. Like Tulo.
Are you starting to go to the other side, Matt?
No. But what it is...
Am I going to have to block you?
But Tulo was released because he was oft injured and cost a lot of money. Now, yeah, Devin Travis doesn't...
That's the difference.
Yeah.
He cost a lot of money.
Right.
And he was also... like 34, 35 years old. Travis is not that old, right?
Right. But the emergence of Bo Bichette in spring training is going to give this front office some pause for thought.
Oh, totally.
Because
I think Bo Bichette has done everything in his power during spring training to prove he belongs on the 25-man roster to begin the season. But if they want to play the Vladimir Guerrero game and wait until mid-April to have him up, I'm fine with that too. But I think that if this team is in this rebuild, I think you definitely have to make sure that Bo Bichette gets what he deserves. And spending a full season down in AAA, to me, would not be what he deserves. He deserves to go out and show that he's a Major League-ready player. He could conceivably challenge Vladimir Guerrero for Rookie of the Year if they're both in the lineup this year. These kids can both be the top two rookies in baseball this year.
But my contention is that with the emergence of someone like Bo Bichette, it's going to give the front office pause for thought when it comes to Devin Travis. Because with Devin Travis off and on the IL, that's going to affect playing time for Bo. So this might come to a point where the front office says, look, we have to choose one or the other, and so far we haven't seen Bo as an injury threat, so maybe we go with Bo. And I'm not over to the other side. Again, this is a fairly routine injury when it comes to professional athletes. Knees and stuff are sensitive areas, and I don't want to be that type of person that's saying Devin Travis is made of glass. But if I'm looking at it from the front office's point of view, this is adding a wrinkle that maybe they want to move off of at some point.
Well, you know, and hearing Ross Atkins and company talk about how Devin is still a very big part of their plans moving forward, now it makes me think that, are they doing the same thing that they do when they're asked about Marcus Stroman?
Agreed.
I mean, the last thing the organization wants to do is tell people that, oh, yeah, Devin Travis is suffering from a lot of injuries. We don't know if he's going to fit into our plans. And they're not going to say, yeah, we're very concerned with Marcus Stroman's tweets and his comments about the organization. Because anything like that that they say publicly is only going to diminish any value when it comes to trades. And if Bo Bichette ends up winning the job and ends up being an all-star second baseman, then, you know, as much as I love Devin Travis, his best opportunity to be a fantastic player in this league could possibly be for him to do that somewhere else. And if the Blue Jays have to trade a Devin Travis, they want to make sure that all the other teams realize how good he is. And because this is a rebuilding year, I think it would be in the Blue Jays' best interest to get Devin healthy, get him back in the lineup, and see him play every day.
Agreed. Totally. 100% agreed. Again, if Bo Bichette wasn't having a great spring and they didn't have this glut of infielders, I would say that this would be a completely moot point. But with Bo Bichette's spring, it's difficult now to say, okay, we're going to keep this spot reserved for Devin, who last season was completely healthy, but this season is coming out of spring training on an injury. Bo Bichette's making this a very difficult choice.
Keep this in mind, Matthew. And again, I understand that Bo Bichette is a rare breed of prospect like a Vladimir Guerrero, but all Bo Bichette has done is proven that he can hit in spring training.
Agreed.
And he can hit in the minors. But he hasn't played AAA, so he's proven that he can hit in every level of the minors and compete in every level of the minors, and he can do it in spring training. But to me, you have no idea until you see what happens during the regular season when you're facing the best of the best and they're bringing it each and every night. And I would love to see Bo Bichette kick some butt. I love watching that kid play. But until I see it, then the jury's still out on just how good of a major league player he can be. But I'm pretty positive he's going to be a good one.
Crazy stories from around the world that are crazy.
Like, did they do it in the stadium?
Here's Matt and Barry.
Well, it's that time of the show where we welcome Matt, the producer, McFarland in, and it is time for us to have a look at some of the weirdness going on in the world. Matt, I'm going to start first today. Mine's relatively short, but not so sweet. Mine happens in Italy, where there was a court ruling about a woman in Italy who had accused two men of raping her. And basically, the trial went on, and these two men were originally convicted of the rape of a Peruvian woman. But the Italian appeals court overturned the verdict and absolved both of these men. You ready? Finding that she was not a credible witness, in part, the court noted that the suspects had found her unattractive and too masculine to be a credible rape victim.
Whoa!
Are you kidding me?
Whoa!
Are you kidding me? So these two guys that sexually assaulted this woman get off of the charges because they, according to them, found the woman to be unattractive and had her listed as, quote, Viking on his cell phone. That's what he had her listed as. The woman suffered a lot of trauma in this. She also required stitches. So this thing happened. This might be more of a out-of-the-court story to talk about one day.
Bro, but this is exactly an out-of-the-court story.
I mean, they say beauty's in the eye of the beholder, but it doesn't matter. You know, you lay your hands on somebody when you're not supposed to. And the fact that they overturned this ruling because of this is just insane.
Oh, man. Yeah, especially in 2019's climate, this is not good. I mean, this wouldn't be good even regardless of the year, but with the whole Me Too movement.
Oh, man.
This is not good. Yeah, and I can't understand how the Italian court would have gotten away with this. This is completely offside.
Totally. Do you have something that's a little bit lighthearted or something that's going to bring this show back up to a reasonable level?
Well, I don't know if this is lighthearted, but when you hear the amount that someone is suing somebody else for, you're going to get a smile on your face.
Hang on. Is this also a story about a lawsuit?
Yes.
We've done it again.
Yes. Yeah. Now, granted, I mean, really, when it comes to these stories, how many times does it involve a lawsuit? It usually involves some sort of a legal proceeding, correct?
Yeah, I guess we've got a little bit of a loophole there.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so this comes from Complex. You can visit them on Twitter at Complex, pretty simple handle. And the headline is, quote, "A frustrated mother claiming her son was disadvantaged as a result of the college bribery scandal is suing Felicity Huffman and Lori Loughlin for, wait for it, $500 billion.
Yes. Love it.
Billion. With a billion. B. With a capital freaking B. Okay? So if you dig deeper in the article, again, complex.com, quote, "Jennifer K. Toy, an award-winning former school teacher from Oakland, California, stated that her son Joshua, who maintained a 4.2 GPA in high school, was not accepted into many of the schools implicated in the scandal. In the suit filed in San Francisco, Toy targeted the dozens of parents indicted on the Operation Varsity Blues investigation for hindering her son's chances at an elite education. This woman, Jennifer K. Toy, is heading up a class action lawsuit with a number of parents, basically suing Lori Loughlin and Felicity Huffman, amongst others, because their sons and daughters were basically not accepted into these universities because these other kids of these rich parents, they were accepted under false pretenses. For $500 billion. Do you know what you can get for $500 billion? Like a fleet of F-35 bombers.
Why would you want that?
I don't know. It's just, they're worth a lot of money.
I suppose so. it's amazing that that was the amount of money her lawyers decided that, why don't you sue for that? That's actually a good number. I think.
Yeah, that seems reasonable. Now, is this just negotiation? Is this, okay, it's arbitration, right? This is what you're choosing. This is what you're choosing. We're going to find something in the middle.
Kids, it's an important lesson. First of all, beauty is only skin deep. Always remember that. But billions of dollars, that goes right through the entire blood veins. Wow. All right, Matt. When we come back, I'm going to have a conversation with Toronto Blue Jay Anthony Alford, who is one of the best Samaritans you're ever going to want to meet, and he's going to tell us why. And then, Matt, you're back with a little talk about video games. That all and more coming up next. Here on The Spin, you're listening to News Talk Saga 960. It's time now to have a look at some home improvement as we do each and every Monday on The Spin. And joining us now is an expert at this work, and that is Mr. Damon Bennett. Damon, one of the nice things about the weather getting warmer is that the snow's melting and we can spend a little bit more time outdoors. The bad news about the weather getting warmer is that the snow is melting and in many places you're seeing some floods. And there was some serious flooding out in the Bolton area on the weekend and Absolutely. Reports of a number of houses that were being flooded. Listen, I know that there are parts of the world where you're prone to tsunamis or hurricanes, but is typical thaw flooding something that can be avoided?
Well, if thaw and flooding can't always be avoided, whether it's a river swelling, you know, we had a record snowfall here in Toronto this year, right? We had deep freezes, so the ground froze really deep, plus a lot of snow. So right now we're dealing with leaky basements all over the place. But you know what's good about this? When you have this much snow, it shows you the flaws in your house. So right now, you can actually see if your foundation is actually leaking. Yeah, no, there's good and bad about that amount of snow. But at the end of the day, I mean, it really shows us what our house is capable of handling, right? So we're in Canada here. We want to make sure that our foundations are dry. And there's all kinds of ways that you can do that getting ready for spring, right? So, you know, right now, you can't do some of the things I'm about to tell you, but you can prep for next spring, next fall, when we get those record rainfalls, when we get all that snow. So grading away from the house. Everyone thinks that's such a silly idea, but a little bit of grading, when I mean grading, you're sloping the earth away from your house. It does so much. It naturally wants to pull that water away from the house. So those are little things that you can do in the backyard, on the side if you can, in the front yards. Try and slope everything away from the house. Also, make sure your weeping tiles are functioning properly. You know, a lot of people have downspouts coming down off of their houses. And a lot of them are still going into the storm drains and into the weeping tile systems of your house. Now, the city of Toronto has made those illegal. So if you ever see a downspout going into the ground, take that thing bloody out and try and kick it away from your house as far as you can, because what's going to happen is you're taking all of that water that's shedding off of your house and you're directing it at your foundation, what it's not meant to handle.
This is pretty wild stuff. So, is there a way that you said that you can tell what your house is made of, really?
Absolutely. Like the worse the weather bearer, think about it, it's actually better because it'll tell you the flaws in your house, just like, you know, with your health. I mean, you're eating fast food one day, the next, you know, all of a sudden you're not feeling so good. You're like, okay, well, I've got to fix that. No more fast food. Same with the house. I mean, if you get a lot of rain and you're starting to see staining or you're starting to see some wet coming through the concrete, well, hey, guess what you got to do? You got to fix it so that you're not worried about it the next season.
Is there a way by walking around the outside of your house to tell whether or not there are areas where there could be cracks or there could be leaks in your foundation?
Absolutely. I mean, any kind of ground settling. So that's the kind of stuff I look for. Ground settling is usually an indication that there's water movement or earth movement in that area. And whenever there's earth movement, that usually means that there's a water source getting there. So whether it's, you know, a crushed weeping tile system where the water is no longer being dispersed around the house properly, or you're just getting some undermining where you're actually having a high water table washing out some of the earth and getting right at that foundation. So those are really good signs. Also look for some cracking. Any kind of cracking you want to caulk, you want to keep an eye on. If it gets bigger, obviously you're going to have to call in the pros to handle that crack. But anything preventative you can do, caulking goes a long way. I mean, even on the, never mind the foundation, I mean, look at the outside of your house. It's the same as we getting ready for winter, right? You want to look at the outside of your house, check your windows, check your doors, check for the caulking issues, check to see if it's shrinking away, because you know what? It takes no space for water to get in. I mean, we're talking space that you can't even see with the naked eye. Water works its way in and causes some of the most severe damage out there.
We're in conversation with Damon Bennett, telling you how to help yourself when it comes to flooding of your house. Damon, it's one thing if you have an unfinished basement, say, you can walk around it and you can see it, you know, leaking in.
Yeah.
But if you have a finished basement and, you know, you've got the drywall and the paint up, you may not see it, but is it possible that there is still leaking going on behind the drywall?
Big time. So those, some of the signs you want to look for on a finished basement is whether or not the drywall is staining, whether or not you can smell anything. Smell is going to be your biggest asset there, because as soon as you can start smelling, that means there's mold being created. So the minute, like, I can walk into a house, Barry, an older house, and the minute I open that basement door, if I smell anything, I can tell them right away your basement's leaking. I mean, trust your senses, right? So use your eyes, look for any kind of discoloration in the drywall, the paint, any kind of bubbling, any kind of staining, drywall cracks, that usually means there's some shifting there. So all kinds of signs, like you have to be able to, you know, think about what water can do and look for those signs in the finished basement, but be preventative, go on the outside first and take a good look around.
You know, it's funny you mentioned about the grading, and when I bought my house, it was about 3 or 4 years old. And one of the things I noticed was that the grass at the end of my backyard was greener than the grass closer to my house. And I'm wondering why that is. And I finally realized that the ground was on an angle pointing down. So when it would rain and whatever, the water would run down towards, you know, the end of the backyard. Is this a common practice for a lot of new homes where they build the backyard with that grade already in there?
Absolutely. So a good builder, honestly, building a new house, they will do that grading because they don't want to have the callback. They don't want to have a tear-in callback where, you know, the insurance company calls you back in as a builder after the year warranty and says, you know what, the grading's not done properly. They got a leaky basement. So most builders know this technology going forward now, and they already do it. But it doesn't mean that things go wrong during the build. So it's something, if you're buying a new house, you can go back to the builder and say, listen, we need to grade it away from the house because obviously it's going to come back into the house. Anything you can get away from the house, the better. And this is why, like, people love their gardens, Barry, like love their gardens up against their house because it looks so good, right? But what do you do on a garden? You dump so much water onto those gardens. I mean, we're getting a little bit away from getting ready for spring, but at the same time, you're dumping so much water as you're watering those gardens. it hits that foundation. Now, foundations are there for a reason, right? They're supposed to be waterproof on the inside, but they're not supposed to be submersible. I mean, they are concrete. They do absorb water. We do our absolute best with the technology we have to actually waterproof them, but you can only do so much. You don't want to dump that much water. It's just like out in Saskatchewan, they have such a high water table there that they're constantly, they're fighting that deep freeze in the winter and then that massive thaw because it's an ancient lake bed there. So the groundwater is really high there.
Anyone who has, you know, patio stones in their backyards or even in their front yards, they'll notice as time goes by that those patio stones that may have been flush with the ground at one point seem to be, you know, it's like they're growing. But that's actually the ground that's going down. How fast does something like that happen? And does that end up changing as far as whether or not your house might need, you know, to be fixed up for waterproofing just because the ground seems to be going down? And you see more and more of your foundation as the years go on.
Yeah, especially if it's a new foundation, you'll get a lot of settling around that, right? So this is why whenever we're doing a new foundation, whenever we're building a new house or doing an addition or something with a full foundation, we let that ground settle before we do any kind of landscaping because ground will naturally settle. Now, you know, we tamp our dirt as we put it in every couple of feet to make sure, but you'll never get that kind of settling like natural settling in the earth, right? So you want that earth to become compacted before you start any kind of expensive fixes on the outside, like patio stones or interlock or anything like that, because those are finishes. And the last thing you want to do is redo finishes because of ground settling and things like that. But I mean, what happened in Bolton is just unbelievable. And that's why in the city of Toronto, now we put things in like backflow preventers so that when the sewers actually get too much water in them, they don't come back up into our basements now. So a backflow preventer is put at the front end of the house on your plumbing line so that if any water wants to back up, it plugs it right there and it keeps it within the city sewer line. So those are things that we have to do in Ontario, in the city of Toronto now. So it helps with no flooding in the house when it comes to the sewers. But I mean, when rivers swell, when there's that much ground saturation, there is not much you can do. That's Mother Nature, and we live on the planet Earth, and we are, you know, at her mercy sometimes.
Okay, Damon, we've talked about how to possibly prevent it. If you've already found that you do have some kind of flooding or leaking going on in your basement, well, I mean, first of all, okay, say I go down my basement and I smell something or I see the stains on my drywall, what do I do?
Well, the first thing you do is get rid of that mold. You got to cut out that area. You got to get to the source of where that water is coming in and take out any damaged material because what water does is as soon as it hits any kind of organic material, like your studs in the basement or any type of wood or paper, anything with organic material, it's going to want to grow mold. And anything can be fixed. So water damage can be fixed. But the problem with mold is it starts making you sick and it starts making the kids sick and it starts making the elderly really sick and it causes other health issues. So first off, get rid of that damaged area, get rid of the mold properly. And if it's if it's over 100 square feet, you actually can't do it yourself. You actually have to get it remediated. So little things like that you need to know. After that, once you've found where the water source is, you start dealing with it then. Look at the crack. If it's a crack in your foundation, okay, so what do I do? Is it something that I can do myself with a little bit of caulking, foundation caulking, or should I call in the pros and really start looking at this? So again, when you smell that, like if you use your senses, people, like if you smell it, you see it, start investigating because that's the last thing you want. Because as we said, like water damage can cause thousands and thousands in damages in your home, right? When it really is preventable if you catch it early.
Yeah, and you mentioned the amount of money that it could cost somebody, but I guess that all depends on the type of damage because I'm thinking, you know, if I have it in my basement, then I'm chopping away drywall and, you know, the beautifully painted walls in my house. It could be very devastating for some people because not only are you looking at repairing your house, but for many people, they've lost, you know, items. They've lost very valuable things that, you know, whether it be pictures or, you know, items that are you know, things that are memorable for their life,
absolutely.
Right?
Well, think about this too. It's not only our basements. Like we have so much rain in the month of March, comes in really strong before spring hits. So we get a lot of weather. So our roofs as well, like I've seen so much damage from roofs leaking over time. And what happened was it wasn't hitting the ceiling of the attic, so they couldn't see it. It was going in between the walls and rotting out the studs down each side of that house. So by the time we were ever able to get in there, Bear, it was unbelievably expensive. We were reframing all the outside walls on the house because the roof had been leaking so badly over such a long period of time. So, you know, it's not only your basements that you want to go in and check. You got to peek your heads up into that attic to make sure, okay, do I see any signs of damage over the winter? Is there any water signs coming in? If so, let's get it looked at right away before it causes that much damage.
Damon, would it be naive for someone to say, well, my house is relatively new. It's 5 years old. It's 10 years old. I'm sure that it would be fine and safe from flooding. Is that naive to think that?
That's extremely naive. You still want to take a look at it. It's like, you know, buying a car and saying, you know, the tires should last me 5 years, so I won't even bother getting them checked every once in a while. So, you know, to me, a lot of the new building that's going on right now, especially the bigger subdivisions, and builders sometimes will kill me for this, but the problem is that they're building so fast, Bear, that mistakes get made,
yeah.
Right? So you're building a subdivision, let's say a few hundred homes, in a matter of 5 to 6 months. I mean, think of how fast those trades are pumping it to get those jobs done. Things happen when they're running that fast. And that's just the nature of the building industry right now. I mean, they're building as fast as we can to get people in homes. So, I mean, it's just the nature of what it is right now. And that's why builders a lot of times have to come back and do fixes on those houses. So be preventative right away when you're buying that house, get that inspector to look at it. But when you're living in the house, even if it's only a couple years old, maintenance is every year, every season. So we have four seasons. I want to look at look around the house all the time. Always keep your eyes open. It's part of your daily routine to me.
For someone who either just doesn't have the time or doesn't know really what to look for,
yeah,
is there a can you call someone and say, hey, listen, can I hire you to come just check my house out and make sure that it's in good condition and there's no leaking or anything like that? And would that be a costly venture? Would that be like hiring an inspector?
Well, that's just it. Like you could, if you have a good inspector, that's the route I would take, because a contractor is going to cost you a fortune to do that, right? They're usually, even handymen, they're paid by the hour. It's, you know, usually gets pretty expensive. So, a contractor spends his whole day at your house. It could cost you a couple of grand. Just looking over things, and he might not even find anything, right? So an inspector is a good way to go, but at the same time, contractors know so much because they deal with it on a daily basis. They're the ones I really trust. So spending that little bit more money on a contractor would be the way I would want to go. But to save a little bit of money, you can still find that really good, inspector out there, a home inspector, that can possibly do it in a few hours for you. You won't get the same kind of knowledge a lot of the time, but it all depends on the right inspector, right? So that's why I'd rather have a builder or a contractor come in and just say, listen, I'll throw you $1,500, $2,000 for the day. Can you do a once over everything on my house? Tell me what's wrong with it, what I need to do to fix it, if you have any serious issues or you have any doubts at all.
And that $1,500 could probably save you $15,000, $20,000, $30,000 in repairs, right?
Well, I'm going to tell you a little story about my house, and it's just a small leak under the sink, Bear, that I never noticed. So it was seeping in behind the cabinets, which we never knew. So all of a sudden I saw this floor starting to swell and separate. And I'm like, okay, we've got a leak. So sure enough, I've got to replace the cabinets and I got to replace the floor for $3,500. So there you go. I mean, that was a small leak that would have taken me 15 minutes to fix and with a $20 part, right? So it just shows what damage water can do.
And you're the expert.
And I'm the expert, right? But it's like a shoemaker's shoe, man. I'm telling you, the last thing I'm looking around is my house half the time. But again, it's natural for me because this is how I grew up. So I'm always looking around, but sometimes there's just stuff you cannot see.
Damon, you're always such a help. Thank you so much, and we'll talk to you next week, pal.
Thanks, buddy boy.
Back here on The Spin for a Monday afternoon, and joining us on the line now, as he always does here on Mondays, is our pal, Johnny the Bat Boy, who is now Johnny, the assistant equipment manager for the Toronto Blue Jays. If I got it right, are you the assistant equipment manager?
You did get it right. It
okay.
Doesn't have the same ring to it, though, does
no,
it?
No, no. You'll always be Johnny the Bat Boy in my mind.
Yeah.
I think our listeners will always think of you that way. So, yeah. Johnny, this week we got a question, and I found this a very interesting question. And you would know, I'm sure, more than anyone, and that is, do ball players, major league ball players, have to buy their own bats, gloves, and spikes?
Very interesting question. I would, to explain that best, I would lump them into two different categories. Bats are kind of their own thing. Spikes and batting gloves. I would say the majority of Major League Baseball players, if not all big league players, have endorsement deals with companies like Nike, Adidas, Mizuno, Easton, whoever the company may be. New Balance is now big. And so with those endorsement deals, those players will get spikes and batting gloves provided to them at no cost. It's kind of part of their deal.
Right, and they just let the world know, hey, look, I'm wearing your shoes, right?
Yeah, so yeah, absolutely.
So if a player gets traded mid-season to a team that wears maybe red spikes, they would just call their Nike guy, or someone will call their Nike guy or New Balance guy and say, hey, I just got traded to the Phillies. Can you send me some red spikes? And they would...
Then
whoever the Johnny the Bat Boy is in Philadelphia would get a shipment of these spikes and he would have them ready for him when he arrives. Is that how it works?
Usually within 2 days, I would say, usually for them to be arrived at the new clubhouse is probably like your best bet.
So have you ever had a player become acquired by the Blue Jays midseason and he gets there and you have to like dig into the like a bowling alley and what size are you? 10 and a half? I think I might have a pair of those. And you dig like an old pair of Rajay Davis shoes or something for him?
Yeah, I mean, it does happen. We usually do carry just generic blue spikes. So we'll have you just your generic Nike blue cleat, your generic blue Under Armour blue cleat, so that in a situation like that, a player can come and say, hey, I wear Nike, I don't have any blues, I need a size 11. That's usually good enough to get them by for a day or so.
What if they ask, like me, what if I came in and I got acquired by the Jays and I asked for a 7 and a half? Would you have to send me to Sport Check or something like that?
Yeah, you're probably going to Dick's Sporting Goods.
Yeah, that's what I figured. Okay, so that's the glove. The shoes. Now,
yes, the bats are an interesting thing. There are only, I believe, 3 officially licensed Major League Baseball approved bat suppliers. Those would be Rawlings, Louisville. And I believe there is one other.
Isn't that the one that Bautista used, that black one?
Marucci?
Yeah, Mariucci.
No. No.
So he can use...
You can use them,
right?
But they are not officially licensed by Major League Baseball.
Oh, interesting. So what does that mean?
They can't have the Major League Baseball logo on the bat.
Ah. So they can have their name on it, but they can't have an MLB logo on it.
Correct. Nor can they say Toronto Blue Jays.
Oh, wow.
They can say Toronto, but they cannot say Blue Jays.
And players basically, like when you see a player that comes with, you know, 150 bats with them, that's out of their pocket money? Or is it the same thing that guys will have a deal? Because I've seen bat companies stationed outside the clubhouse during spring training. So
yeah,
they're looking for players who can be... You know,
they're looking to expand their clientele. Absolutely. They bring samples. Usually in spring training, all of these bat vendors will set up a little spot and try and get players that aren't swinging their bats to at least sample the bat. So, for example, I'm a Louisville guy. I swing Louisville. Warstick is a bat company. They come in, they say, hey, John, we really want to get you using one of our bats. We think we make a good product. We think you'd like it. They will usually provide anywhere, depending who the player is, 6 to 12 bats on them.
And they'll probably give them their name on the bat and the whole thing?
Correct. They're giving them the whole treatment. So actual out-of-pocket cost to the club for baseball bats, we will provide them with Louisville's. We will provide them with Rawlings. But so anything beyond that.
Right. So the team will give the players these bats, like as many as they need.
Correct.
Okay. Because I thought, you know, if you say a rookie player breaks a bat, he's like, oh, crap, there's like a whole, you know, day's salary. Now I got to buy another bat. But you guys will supply like the generic bats. But will they have their names on them too? Or do they have to do that on their own?
If a player wants to use Louisville or use Rawlings, we can put the order in that has the player name, absolutely.
And that's
in
covered.
The event of a player gets called, correct.
Yeah.
In the event a player gets called up.
Right.
We have generic bats that just say Toronto on them and all kinds of different sizes.
Okay.
And weights and measurements.
Gloves are a very personal type of thing.
Yeah. Correct. Gloves are very personal.
So again, is this something that the team will supply if it's a licensed glove, or guys on the hook to do their own gloves?
Oh no, gloves are 100% up to the player and the company in which he wants to get the glove from.
Right, and many of the star players will have endorsements, so they'll get, again, their glove supplier will give them a crap load of gloves and say,
correct,
just let people know that you're using it, right?
Correct.
So back when Yan Gomes played for the Jays, and he had, I think, five different gloves because he played all these different positions, that's pretty much him going out and buying five different gloves?
Ooh, I'm trying to remember who Yan Gomes had as a supplier. I believe he had Mizuno.
So they would, like, but rookie players, I mean, you don't come into the league usually with a supplier, right? You have to kind of build yourself.
You know what? A lot of minor league players do have deals.
Really?
Especially AAA players, yeah.
Well, that's great. Hey, so, Johnny, as we wrap up, if you do happen to see a pair of size 7s, a glove for a southpaw like me, and an aluminum bat maybe lying around, just send them my way. I'll be happy to take any of the scraps, okay?
Barry, I say this with much love, but I can assure you that when I walk into the ballpark tomorrow, I will not see any size 7 shoes.
All right, Johnny, we'll talk to you next week.
Have a good one, guys.
7.5, by the way. Bye-bye, Johnny.
Let me go. I don't want to be your hero.
You're listening to The Spin with Barry Davis on Saga 960 AM.
Welcome back to The Spin here on News Talk Saga 960. Barry Davis with you. And we are now joined by Toronto Blue Jays outfielder Anthony Alford. And Anthony, before we talk about baseball, I want to get your thoughts on something that happened a couple of weeks ago out of the norm. And that was the car accident that you came across as you were leaving the ballpark in Clearwater. For those of our listeners who are unaware, take us through what happened from your eyes.
So leaving the field, coming up, I think it was Main Street. I was driving in the middle lane and this truck, Kevin Biggio, he was in the right lane. And he was probably two car lengths in front of me. And I look up and I see a brown car stopped in the middle of the road. And so I slam on my brakes and stop in the middle of the highway and barely missed the car. But I hear a loud crash to my right and look over there and this black truck has done crash into a concrete wall. So I hop out and couldn't make out who it was because of the airbags and the smoke. But when I got to the truck and we pulled a guy out, I realized it was Kevin Biggio. And so my heart kind of dropped. I mean, I didn't know it was him, but it was kind of like a surprise. But I was just glad that he was able to walk away from it.
At what point did he realize it was you that came to rescue him?
Well, as soon as we got him out the truck, he was really shaken up, after, cause it was a pretty bad, car accident. So he was pretty shaken up and, yeah. So he looked at me and said, with this look in his eyes, Anthony, that's you. And, yeah, but I mean, it was just it was just tough to see him like that.
Oh, man. And, of course, you know, Cavan's doing fine now, and he wasn't seriously injured in the accident. But when you see, I mean, again, you're the type of guy that's a good Samaritan. You are going to come and help out whoever it was. But when you open up that car door and you get through the airbags and you see that is one of your teammates and one of your good friends, I mean, it must become a very surreal moment at that point, huh?
Oh, yeah, most definitely. But like I said, I was just glad he wasn't hurt because, I'm just glad he wasn't hurt because looking at the outside of the truck, I mean, there's no way he's supposed to walk away from him. But I'm just glad I was there on the scene to help him out and he was able to see a familiar face.
Now, did you have to stick around and talk to the police and be a witness to all this and kind of describe what happened to the police officers when they got there?
Yeah, I just had to give a witness statement. And after that, by the time I gave a witness statement, I think Santiago was on the scene and I think he took Bezio home. But yeah, I just stuck around to give a witness statement and then I kind of headed back home.
Man, you know, it just shows you the way life is, right? You never know what's going to happen. We have no idea, you know, where the path is going to take us, and you just have to do what you have to do in situations like that.
Right, right. I mean, it kind of opened my eyes at the same time, just knowing, like, because his life could have changed right then in the split of a second. And at the same time, like, I'm a big fan of Bezio. Like, he's an awesome guy. Like, he's a great baseball player, but he's an awesome guy. And, like, I just think you got to cherish the moments you have with people that's around you, especially, like, us and this organization is kind of like a family. Like you kind of get that family vibe with some of the guys. So it's like you got to really cherish the moments you have because at any minute things can change.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, maybe not as serious as somebody being seriously injured in an accident, but guys get traded, guys get sent down, called up. I think that a lot of fans, they look at baseball players or any professional athletes and, you know, they put them up on this pedestal and make them like superheroes, but you are all human beings with real feelings. You must have had moments in your career where someone close to you has been traded or sent somewhere else. How hard is that to deal with as a human, let alone a player?
Yeah. So Dwight Smith, he was just traded to the Orioles. Dwight is someone I was real close with, really good friends with Dwight. He's one of the first people that I knew when I got drafted. And so we kind of hung together a lot. But at the same time, I mean, like, we kind of know, like, the business side of it. And, I mean, if we had it our way, we could try to build, we would like to build Blue Jay our whole life. But the reality of that is kind of slim. But, yeah, like, we actually just got to experience it here pretty recently with Dwight.
In some ways, is it kind of bittersweet with Dwight because you hate to see him go, but you know he's going to have a much better opportunity in Baltimore than he would in Toronto?
Right, right. Yeah, it's definitely bittersweet. Like, yeah, selfishly, yeah, do we want him to be here so we can have a good time? Like, yes. But at the same time, you want him to be successful in his career. Whatever's best for him, you want that to happen. And if that's going to another organization, we'll still be able to link up whenever we play each other in the near future.
And you play the Orioles a lot. That's the thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Especially being in that same division. But I know he's going to be pretty hyped whenever he come back to Toronto.
We're in conversation with Anthony Alford. Anthony, it's a new feeling in spring training this year with Charlie Montoyo and some new coaches. Do you get a sense that it's a different feeling in camp this year as a player, just the overall way things are being done? And again, not to say anything against, you know, John Gibbons, but Charlie's a different kind of guy and he does things differently. And we've seen four man outfields and a lot of kind of different things. What has it been like in camp?
It's honestly been pretty laid back. Charlie's easygoing, very nice guy, very easy to communicate with. He's pretty new at, I mean, being a manager in the big leagues. And then at the same time, we have a lot of new guys in the locker room, a lot of younger guys. And I think what him and the staff does is make those younger guys like myself and other guys who's in camp for the first time feel comfortable. And I think that's very important, especially having to go out there and perform. You want those guys to be comfortable so they can perform at the best of their ability. And I think him and the staff do a pretty good job of that.
Anthony, is this the first time that you've been in camp and felt this good about the possibilities? And I know it's completely out of your hands and you can have just an incredible camp and you know, things you are out of your control, whether or not you make the team or not. But is this as good as you have felt in a spring training?
Yeah, this is most definitely the best I've felt. Not just numbers wise and the results, but my body as well. Like I feel good. It's probably the best my body has felt in spring training. But then again, this was my second off season, but I've always played in the wintertime. Like I've always went to the fall league, Australia, Mexico, whatever it was. So I had a full 4 months to recover and kind of get my legs back under me. And so I feel really well health-wise.
And you've been showing it, you know, with the power too. Is that something that you've been working on, or is that something that has always been there, that you've got the ability to drive the ball out of the park?
I think it's something that's always been there, but it was just a matter of it coming out. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's just like it's things that I feel like I had to learn about myself as a hitter. I wanted to become a good hitter first before I started trying to hit with power. Not saying that I'm trying to hit with power this year.
It comes naturally though, right?
I just kind of tweak some mechanics. The only thing I'm doing now is just putting myself in a better hitting position more often, giving myself a chance to barrel up more balls. And I just think whenever I do that, I just give myself a chance. Opposed to, like, I had a lot of stuff going on mechanically. I had a lot of big moves, a lot of movement in my load, which caused me to miss pitches that I shouldn't miss. And now I feel like I'm getting to those pitches pretty good.
We're talking with Anthony Alford from the Toronto Blue Jays. Anthony, it's quite clear that this team is going in a direction of, you know, having young players get opportunities and the rebuilding of what's going on. Does that kind of give a lot of you younger players a chance to see a kind of light at the end of the tunnel, whether it be yourself or Dalton Pompey, that there is a chance where for years you guys knew that it was Jose Bautista and Kevin Pillar and some other veteran playing in left field. And now, I mean, yeah, sure, Pillar and Grichuk are part of the thing, but there's always room for more young players now to have an opportunity to be on this team. Do you see it that way in a personal matter, that you go into camp and now you know that, you know, you've got a chance to prove something?
Yeah, you do. I think, like, you do see it that way, but at the same time, like, we don't focus on it like that, because I just think if we got caught up into where we was going and where we could land, like, it wouldn't give us, like, we wouldn't be able to do our jobs the best that we can, you know? I just feel like most guys kind of have the approach of, like, okay, I'm just going to do whatever I can to make myself the most successful, whatever that is. Whatever I can do to help the team, that's what I'm going to do, and make myself valuable. Not necessarily, like, looking at it as if, okay, I'm going to get an opportunity here. Like, I just think it's kind of hard to perform to the best of your ability when you get caught up in that. But I do think guys are excited. I do think a lot of the younger guys are excited, just knowing in the back of your mind, like, there's a chance that I can break with the team.
And, you know, it's funny because you've been around the organization for so long and you're a guy that people have been talking about for the longest time. You were drafted in 2012, but then we forget that you're only 24 years old. So it's not like you are, you know, over the hill by any stretch of the imagination, but at 24, are you a more mature guy now that maybe at 21, if that opportunity was a possibility, you'd dwell on that more and maybe lose the focus? But now as a 24-year-old, you've been around a few years, you can focus your brain on what you need to do and not worry about what is out of your control?
I definitely think I'm way more mature. I think more of just the experiences that I've had, like playing, coming up through the development stages and stuff. I just think, like, that kind of molded me to where I am right now. And I just think, like, I'm at a stage now, like, I've been like at 21, I wasn't good at handling failure. It was hard for me to overcome those 0-for-4s. When I hit a bad stretch, like I feel like I deal with that kind of stuff better now. And I think that's what you got to do at the major league level. So was the talent there to play at 21? Probably so, but mentally, I don't think I would have been ready at 21, knowing what I know now.
You know, it amazes me how many players I hear say things like that, and it really shows you just how much the mental aspect comes into the game, right?
Right.
You know, I remember Kevin Pillar telling me a few years ago that, you know, he would waste good at bats because he would be frustrated if he didn't get on base, and then he'd try to change things when he had a great at bat. It just happened that the ball went to somebody who caught it. And
right,
instead,
right.
You know, if you're worried so much about your actual results as opposed to what you did, it can really mess you up, huh?
Oh, most definitely. This is baseball play. I mean, because everything we do, we're judged by numbers. But I just think us as baseball players, we're just so result-oriented. We can go out there and barrel up 4 balls just right after someone, and we just feel like we just had the worst day. But, like, I think we have to remember, like, okay, it's a hard game. Like, you can barrel it up. You can probably barrel it up right at somebody, but you kind of got to move on to that next at bat. But you can't, because you can't do anything about that 0-for-4 that I had tonight. I can't do anything about it. But I can – what I can do is not allow that to affect the way I feel tomorrow mentally.
You have some intangibles, and you know the speed that you have is a huge bonus for you. Do you kind of look at that and think about the tools that you have that can really help you gain the spot, if not this year, then you know somewhere down the line, as opposed to just being a guy who can hit or just being a guy who can field? I mean, having that speed, that's not something you can teach someone. You either have it or you don't.
Right, right. That's something I'm very grateful for. Thanks to my mom. She was a track runner. But I do think that I can, like, contribute more by having speed. Because sometimes, like, you're just going to go through those bad stretches whenever you're not getting hits. But at the same time, like, if I'm not getting hits and I'm walking – and I can
Barry,
still
Michelle, congratulations
still
on the show, and call anytime.
Score runs. That's still another way that I can help the team, whether it's on defense, being able to track balls down, or hold someone on first, allowing someone to stay on first and not get the second on the ball in the gap. Whatever it is, I just feel like I can contribute a lot with my speed. I just think it's tough. Like, I mean, some guys who can just absolutely hit, they'll be able to hit in the bigs. But I just feel like my speed is something that's going to be able to help the team win as well.
Well, listen, Anthony, wish you nothing but the best this season. And hey, listen, if you ever have a bad day and things don't go well, you always have your beautiful wife, Bailey. They can sing you into a great mood, right?
Oh yeah, most definitely. Well, she does that a lot.
I imagine she does, and wish her the best from me as well. Thanks so much for doing this, and we'll see you, whether it be Buffalo or Toronto, and I'm really pulling for Toronto. I'm sure we'll see you this season.
Okay, thank you.
There is Anthony Alfred, and we want to thank you all for listening to the Spin Podcast. You can join us each and every day from 4 till 7 p.m. on News Talk Saga 960. You can also stream us on nsrmedia.ca and pick up the podcast version each and every day as well. I'm Barry Davis for Matt McFarlane and Michelle Storino. Want to thank you so much for making us a part of your week.